Archibald said, good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today. Today's daf is Mem Tes. We are picking up on Mem Ches Amud Beis. We're picking up in Meretz Hashem 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is dedicated by our Talmud Torah, by Shmuel and Rachel Newman, for Refuah Shlema for Shmuel's mother, Cyril Mindel Bas Esther. We hope that she, together with Kol Chole Yisrael, have a complete and enduring Refuah. She is also dedicated, of course, by our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Kislev, Josh and Becker Freeman, Le'ili Nishmas, Josh's father, Yisrael Yehuda ben Rav Chaim Rafael, and Sammy and Malka Esterson, Le'ili Nishmas, their parents, Yitzchok Leib ben Aaron HaKohen, Sarah Rachel Bas Baruch, and Hinda Baz Helech Ephraim. Hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah and the family in a Chala. We also dedicate the learning. I'm sure many of us followed the shocking news out of Jersey City yesterday with the terrible attack in a kosher convenience store that has left at least two members of the Hasidic community there dead. Young people murdered in cold blood. We'll find out the rest of the news today, but we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, those neshamas will have an aliyah, the families in Nechama, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu will finally say, Dai Litzareinu. Let's begin. Toch HaPerach. So, remember again, yesterday we began the discussion about who is going ahead and doing these bedikos, right? In the situation that ultimately, again, you need to do the bedika of a bogeres, so hal arvanara, I should say, saloch lamai, so who's doing these bedikos? So we saw different opinions, and I will say what it really came down to is we're beginning to see a distinction ultimately in when those bedikos are being done. Because halacha lamaisa, bedikos at different stages yield different realities. So we left off with toch haperek, right? So remember again, if the bedikos being done toch haperek, so we'll say toch haperek means the year before gadlus. So for example, for a girl, this of course would be between 11 and 12 years old. So toch haperek in Russian bold goes osan. In that case, he holds that women ultimately, again, cannot conduct that bedika. Kasavar, toch haperek kila achar haperek. So ultimately, again, that year leading up to maturation is like afterwards. But afterwards, meaning after a girl reaches the age of 12, we have the chazaka of Rava. There was, remember again, this chazaka of Rava was the statement we ended off with yesterday. A very important thing what Rava said, Kitana she'egia leklal shenoseh, eino tzricha bediga, chazaka hevia simanim. Rava says, in general, Bosai, we don't do a bedika for a girl when she turns 12. Why? Because we hold like Rava, who says that halacha lemaisa, once a girl reaches the age of maturation, we assume that she has displayed the signs of maturation. However, that chazaka only applies from 12 years old and up, does not apply ultimately, again, between the ages of 11 and 12. Rav Shimon says, af tocha perek noshim, both goes, women can even conduct the bedika during that lead-up year, kasavar tocha perek kilif ne'aperek, because he holds ultimately again, before that year, 11 to 12, is like the years which precede it. Ubaye bedika, why would a bedika be necessary? Because if they were to go ahead and find two hairs, let's say, before that lead-up time, or even during that lead-up time, so halacha lemaisa, it would be important to identify those hairs, because even if they were to still be present after the girl turns 12, those are not considered to be pubic hairs, or hairs that display physical maturation. Rather, we associate them with a mole. So the Gemara says, "V'ne'emenes ish lahagmer v'lo lahakel." Then Braisa then said, a woman is believed in her testimony to be machmir b'nat to be mekel. So hay man katanila. We'll say, who is the author of this statement? Ibaisim Rabbi Huda. So if you want to say that it's Rabbi Huda Vatocha Perek, and it's referring Dafka, ultimately to the lead-up year, to the ages between 11 and 12, top of Memtes, Vibaisim Rabbi Shimon, or you could say it's Rabbi Shimon, Ula Achra Perek, and it's dealing ultimately again with after the lead-up time, Velesle Chazaka de Rava. And apparently, again, according to this approach, he would not subscribe to the Chazaka of Rava, again, the Chazaka of Rava being that once a girl turns 12 years old, halacha lemaisa, she has developed signs of physical maturation. Good. So the Mishnah ended off with saying, mipnei sha'am. So we'll say, if you remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. So the way this Mishnah began was a fascinating machlokes about what happens if a girl develops simanim elyonim before Simanim Tachtonim. So here we had a machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir said that ultimately, again, she's not a Gedola. Why? Because Rabbi Meir holds that a girl could develop Simanim Elyonim without developing Simanim Tachtonim. Chachamim say impossible. Simanim Tachtonim always precede Simanim Elyonim. Aye, but this girl has Simanim Elyonim, but not Simanim Tachtonim. To which the Gemara answers, because Kohen Tcham must have been at what? The hairs were there, but they fell out. The Mishnah then ends off by saying, Mipnei Sha'amru, Efshar L'tachton Lavo Ad Shalo Ba Elyon. Because they said, right, that ultimately, again, the upper signs could come, that the lower signs could come before the upper signs, Aval Efshar L'Elyon, Lavo Ad Shalo Lava Tata. But it is impossible for the upper signs to occur without the lower signs occurring. So we'll say, which is the statement of the Rabbanon. So the Gemara says, Hasulamali. I don't understand. Why does the Mishnah need to restate that? In other words, we'll say, the last part of the Mishnah is simply restating the position of the Rabbanon, which is that halacha lemaisa, simani tachtonim, right, lower signs of maturation, cannot occur without simanim elyon. I'm sorry, let me say that again. The opposite. Simanim elyonim, upper signs of maturation, cannot occur without simani tachtonim. Cannot occur without lower signs. So we learned that. Right, we already said that before in the Mishnah. Why does the Mishnah feel compelled to restate it again at the end? Hasu lamali, hatana l'resha, v'chitema mishum dekabai l'mistama kirabanan. So maybe you want to say, ultimately again, in order to establish the Stam Mishnah like the Rabbanan. Okay, pshita, that's obvious. So we'll say it's obvious that the Mishnah reflects the view of the Rabbanan. How so? Because the halacha reflects the view of the Rabbanan. Why? Because yachid v'rabim halacha kirabim. Because they're all saying, in general, in halacha, whenever you have a dispute between an individual and a collective, right, and a group, the halacha always follows the majority opinion. In this case, the majority opinion is the Rabbanon, to which the Gemara says, what would you have thought? Nistabra, taimad Rabbi Meir, dekam misayaya leikra. You might have thought, ultimately, again, that maybe Rabbi Meir's logic is a bit more sound. Why? Because he has a pasuk. I also remember, again, in yesterday's daf, so Rabbi Meir was quoting all of these psukim, shadayim nachonu v'sarech tzimeach, right? Speaking about the development of the upper simanim before lower simanim. So you might have thought that because Rabbi Meir has a pasuk, ultimately, again, he's correct. Kamash malon, no. Kamash on that, even though Rabbi Meir brings a pasuk, Rabbi Osai, we still paskin like the Rabbanon, who ultimately say that what? There are no simani elyonim without simani tachtonim. And even if you find simani elyonim, and there are no simani tachtonim, that's just because the hairs fell out. V'bayisim, the other possibility is, mishum de kabay lemisne ki yotzebo. Or else the other possibility is because that's why that the end of the previous Mishnah is going to ultimately link to this Mishnah. Or as Rabbi say, thematically we're going to see the past Mishnah and the Mishnah we're about to start are thematically linked. How are they thematically linked? They follow this model of this can be true without this, but this can't be true without this. So it's quite possible that the Mishnah just simply restates the Svara of the Rabbanon at the end of the Mishnah, not really in order to reinforce the halacha. We know the halacha follows the Rabbanon, because you have a machlokes right here in the Rabbanon. Of course, the halacha follows the Rabbanon. Rather, just to stylistically flow better into the next Mishnah. Good. And I will say with that, let us begin the next Mishnah. So it says the Gemara. Fine. We'll say it's obvious because the Gemara just said it over here, but the way that ultimately, again, the halacha paskins is in conformance with the position of the Chachamim. Namely, the way biologically, the way it works is that a girl will go ahead and have simanim tachtonim before she has simani elyonim. That's the way it works physiologically. And even if you find simanim elyonim, and you don't find simani tachtonim, we assume that they were there, they just fell out. Good. Says the Mishnah. Rabbi say here, we're going to go on a little bit of a tangent. Kiyotzebo. Rabbi say, along these same lines, this is also the linkage. Kiyotzebo means, Rabbi say, now they're not really thematically linked, as you're going to see, they're stylistically linked. Kiyotzebo. Kokli cheres shu machnis umotzi. Rabbi say, so ultimately again, kokli cheres shu machnis motzi. So I'll say any kli cheres, ultimately again, shehu machnis, that could allow liquid in, also allows liquid out. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi in the Mishnah. Koshu shehu machnis, mashke, kishamanicho al hamayim, yesh bol nekev gadol, shamayim nichnas l'socha. So we'll say anytime you have a utensil, kli cheres, and what happens? The utensil has a hole. To the point that if you were to put the utensil on water or into water, that ultimately, again, the hole is big enough that water comes in. Motzi. Motzi Rashi says, Kol shekein im nasun hamayim lusocho yotzi amashke l'chutz. All the more so that hole will be big enough. That's what? That if water or liquid is inside of the utensil ultimately, again, comes out. So we'll say, apparently what the Mishnah is saying is like this. Interestingly enough, you need a bigger hole for water to go in, to go into the kli from outside the kli, than for water to come out from inside the kli. See, anytime a kli cheres has a hole, which is large enough to allow water in, water, by the way, just the descriptive of the liquid, whatever liquid, water in, that hole is certainly large enough ultimately to allow water out. You'll see why that matters in just a moment. V'yesh shemotzi ve'ino machnis. But I will say, sometimes a kli could have a hole that is only large enough to allow water in, but not to allow water out. I'm sorry, just the opposite. There's a kli that's large enough, thank you. There's a kli that has a hole that is large enough to allow water out, but doesn't allow water in. So we'll say, so bottom line is, the hole to ultimately go ahead and allow water and to, let me read that again, right? The hole to go ahead and allow water in is larger than the hole to allow water out. Good. Code next. So we'll say any limb that has a nail. So this is actually a very interesting one. Rashi says, Kol Eiver is etzba yisera. If someone has an extra finger, someone has a sixth digit, right? A sixth finger. So let's listen to this. If that Eiver has a nail, right? So Kol Eiver sheyesh bo tziporin, yesh bo etzem. So anytime you have a limb that has a nail, it also always has a bone. V'yesh sheyesh bo etzem ve'ein bo tziporin. But ultimately, again, some extra limbs which may have a bone do not necessarily have a nail. And I will say now, what's going on over here? Look at Rashi, quite interesting. Kol eiver etzba yisera sheyesh bo tziporin yesh bo etzem v'havi eiver chasha. So listen to this. If ultimately, again, so the Mishnah says, if the extra, it calls it an extra limb, but the specific example over here is a finger. So if a person has an extra finger, and that extra finger has a nail, that extra finger has a bone. What's the ramifications of that? V'havi eiver chashuv. They both say, if it has a bone, then it is considered to be an important limb. What does that do if it's an important limb? Ometame ba'ohel. They both say, once something is called an eiver chashuv, ultimately, again, it could convey tumas ohel. Afilu ein bashir dekai molon. Haivar ein lansher afilu pachlus gezas. So we'll say here's the interesting chap. So remember again, halacha lemaisa, something is deemed an aver, it's metami tumas ohel, no matter how small it may be. If something is not an aver, look at Rashi, v'yesh yesh bo etzem v'lo have aver im yiseres hi aval ina yiseres afilu in batziporin averu metami. So let's listen to this. But however, something ultimately, again, that is not considered an aver, we're going to see could convey tuma, but ultimately, again, not tumas ohel. Good. Next. Kala metame medris, metame tamime. So we'll say anything that could contract tumas medris can also contract tumas mace. V'yesha metame tamime mace, ve'ena metame medris. But there are certain things which could become tamime mace, but do not become tamay tumas medris. So also remember, again, we've learned about tumas medris many times. Under normal circumstances, in order for something to go ahead and have tumah or contract tumah, there must be a base kibul, there must be a receptacle. The exception to this rule is something that, let's say, a zav could lay down on or sit on. Something that a zav could lay down on or sit on is mekabel tumah, even if it's flat. So that's what it means, tumas medris. Good, says the Gemara. Let's analyze this. So now let's start with our kli cheres. So we started off by saying that any kli cheres, shumachnis motzi. So we'll say any kli cheres that allows water in certainly allows water out. So remember again, the hole to allow water in is larger than the hole to allow water out. So if it allows water in, it can certainly allow water out. So the Gemara says, what exactly, like, What's the ramification? I mean, what are the ramifications of this? So machnes, I'll tell you why. If a kli has a hole that is large enough to allow water out, pasul mechatos upasul mishum gistra. Now we'll say ultimately again, it cannot be used for mechatos, right? Ultimately again, if it allows water in, it cannot go ahead and be used for mechatos. So we'll say, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Lemechatos, lekadish bo mechatos. Rachmana amar mayim chayim el keli v'halav klihu. So as well, say very simply, if you have a kli that allows water in, then halacha lemaisa, such a kli cannot be used for para aduma. Remember again, you mix the ashes and the water inside of a kli, and halacha lemaisa, this is not a kli if it allows water in. Furthermore, mishum gistra. But it's actually very interesting. Rashi, if you look at Rashi, go a little bit out of order. Rashi says gistra, just Rashi says gistra. Hainu shivrei kli charas haroyin lemalacha. Let's listen to this. Under normal circumstances, if once a kli breaks, it loses its identity as a kli because it can no longer function as a kli. The exception to this is follows, is if you have a kli that breaks and there is a shard that is still large enough to function in some type of kli capacity, that shard is still mekabel tuma. So that's called the gistra. Gistra is called the shard. So look at that Rashi again. Hainu shivrei kli charas haroyin lemalacha avadai mekabel tuma. So if you have a shard that's still usable in some capacity, it's still mekabel tuma. Okay, it's having gemar ve'le trefus. So I'll say, so go back to the previous Rashi, Apostle Mishum Gistera. Kilomar Koshekin and Nikva Gistera, Bekonis Mashke, Batale. So we'll say, so therefore again, Halacha Lamaisa, if you have a shard, but the shard is large enough, it has a hole that is large enough to allow water in, Halacha Lamaisa, it no longer has the identity of a shard. So I'll say, so again, once it becomes so perforated that again, you could allow water in, it doesn't have an identity as a shard. So we'll say, so therefore, Allah Chalamaisa, the Imam is saying two things. If a kli has a hole that is large enough to allow water in, it cannot be used as a kli for para aduma, and it no longer has the identity as a gistera, as a shard. Next, motzi. What happens, I'll say, if the kli has a hole, but it's smaller. Smaller. So it's so small that what? It doesn't allow water in, but it does what? It does what? Allow water out. So what's the halacha in this case? Motzi kashul mechata. So we'll say, interestingly enough, if the kli has a hole and the hole allows water out, interestingly enough, it is still usable for mechatos. Still usable for para aduma. Look at Rashi. Why is it kashul mechatos? The kli shalim benekev katan kuli hay lo batos. You will say, we often are conditioned to think that once a kli has a hole, it's no longer a kli. So apparently the Gemara is saying that's not true. As long as it's a small enough hole, then halacha lemaisa, you could still use the kli. And as we're supposed to remember again, even with the paraduma, you just need to be able to use the kli fast enough that the contents don't fully leak out. I say halacha lemaisa with a hole that is so small that it wouldn't allow water in, but would allow water out. Halacha lemaisa, such a kli is kosher for paraduma, but upasul mishum gistera. Rabbi say, but halacha lemaisa, it loses its identity as a shard, which we're going to see makes sense because a shard is already a compromised kli. Once you compromise it further, then what? Then halacha lemaisa, it doesn't even have the din of a gistera. Amar Rav Asi says, shonin kli cheres. Shonin, we learned, kli cheres shiuro bekones mashke. Right? The shear of a kli cheres, right? Rashi says over here, shonin means halacha lemoshe misinai. Very interesting. The halacha lemoshe misinai is shiuro bekones mashke. That the shear of a kli cheres is ultimately, again, if what? If it allows liquid in. Rashi says, pachos shal shiurim hamevatlim oso mios kli. When does a kli cheres cease to be a kli? When it has a hole that is large enough to allow water in. And I will say, if a kli has a hole that is not large enough to allow water in, but is large enough to allow water out, so ultimately, again, that will not compromise the identity of a kli as a kli cheres, but what? It will go ahead and impact gistra, right? Elalein gistra bilvad. So we'll say, so remember again, a regular kli cheres, if the hole is large enough to allow water in, it's not a kli. If the hole is small, is smaller, and therefore only allows water out, but doesn't allow water in, it still retains its identity as a kli. But a gistra, if you have a shard of a kli that was functioning as a kli, and it develops a hole, and the hole is small, right? It only allows water out, that is no longer a gistra. It's no longer a shard. Why is that? My time, Amram Azut, Rabbi Drab Nachman, Lefi Shein Omrim, Have Gistra, Le Gistra. Because Rabbah say, no one says bring a shard to repair the shard, which is another way of saying, like I said before, the shard is already a compromised kli. So essentially what the halacha is saying is, once it becomes compromised more, then halacha lamai said no longer has the status of a kli. At a certain point in time, it ceases to be a kli. Ken Rabbanan, both let's analyze this further. Ketzad bodkin kli cheres leid de im nikev bekones mashke im lav. So we'll say, how do we check a kli cheres? So remember again, I have a kli cheres that I want to use, that I want to use for para aduma, right? I know that it has a hole. What don't I know? What don't I know? The size of, what the nature of the hole. Remember again, for kli cheres, for para aduma, when does the kli cheres become possible? Only if what? If it's machnis, if it allows water in. Right, if it allows water in, that size of that hole is too large, ultimately invalidates the use of the kli. If it's small enough that it doesn't allow water in but allows water out, it's usable. So what's the test? Ketzad bodkin kli cheres leidam nikev bekones mashke im lav. So very simple. Yavi areva malei mayim v'nosin kedera l'socha. So we'll say it's pretty simple. You bring a trough filled with water, and what do? You put the kli in. Right? V'nosin kedera l'socha. Im kansa, if water comes in, biadua shekones mashka, then ultimately, again, I see that what? I see that water comes in. Ve'im lav, and if water doesn't come in, biadua shemotzi mashka. Right? Well, so it's a pretty straightforward. You'll see why, like, the Gemara has to go through this exercise. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda says, no. Rabbi Huda says, I don't like that approach. Rather, here's what you have to do. Kofev ozne kedera l'socha, umatzif aleh mayim. Rabbi says like this. Here's what you do. You take an empty trough. Take an empty trough. I say trough. You know, whatever, receptacle. Take the kli. Put it in the empty trough, face down. Face down is the wrong word. Upside down, thank you. Upside down, top down. So put the kli inside the empty trough, upside down. Then what? Matzif aleh mayim. Pour water now into the trough. Im kones biadua shekones mashke. If water gets in the kli, then you know for sure that the kli has a hole that is large enough to ultimately allow water in. Vimlav, and if nothing gets in the kli, biadua shemotzi mashka, right? So ultimately, again, you know that halacha lemaisa, it doesn't allow water in. So we'll say, what does this mean? So we'll say, look at Rashi, it's actually quite fascinating. Rashi, Rabbi Huda Omer, lo kach both goes. Rabbi Huda doesn't like the approach. Who was saying the previous approach? Just the Braisa. Didn't like the approach of the Braisa. Why not? Lokach bodkin, also Rashi says, the hakulahu, the aidi de dochek le shulayim amaya, aili maya legaba. Aval afilu benak of katra. So listen to this. Rabbi Huda says, that's not a proper experiment to see the real size of the hole. Why? Because if you push that kli into a trough filled with water, there's force. There's force. And it could be that because of the force, that's why the water gets in through the hole. But again, it could very well be that halacha lemaisa, by itself, that water would not get through the hole. That's why Rabbi Huda likes his model a little bit better. Put the upside down kli into the trough, pour the water in, there's less what he calls dechika, right? I'm sorry? Buoyancy pressure, good. Dechika. So therefore, there's less force being pushed upon the kli, and therefore it's a truer test to see the nature of the hole. Okay, good. So we'll finish that. Rashi says, "Lo kach bol kinosa da hakulahu da aidi de dachik luhu l'shulayim amaya aili maya legavo." Because of the pressure of the water, the force of the water goes inside the kli. Afilo benekev katan, even in a much smaller hole. So I'll say, so what Rabbi Huda is saying is, here's the problem. So here's what I will say. We know that it's a larger hole that allows water in and a smaller hole that allows water out. That we know. What Rabbi Huda is concerned about is, it could very well be that even in a much smaller hole, right, with this experiment, the water will get in. But not because it's really a hole that's machnis, but because of the effort expanded by the water. Says the Gemara. Go back to the Gemara. Oh, another possible current tribute. There is Shov Sa'al Gabe Ha'ar. So most say, or what you could do is fill the pot with liquid and put it on top of fire. Ima or ma'amida. So most say, ultimately, again, if the fire keeps the liquid inside of the pot, right? Biadua Shemotzi Mashke. Then I know I will say that's what? That this is a hole, that a smaller hole that allows liquid out, but doesn't allow liquid in. Ve'im lav, but ultimately, again, if the liquid comes out of the hole, even while the pot is on the fire, Then I know ultimately again that this hole is large enough to allow liquid in. So we'll say, see, this is very interesting. So apparently there's this idea that fire, that I guess the heat of the fire somehow keeps the water inside of the utensil a bit more. Okay, Rabbi Yossi says, Aflo shos al gabei ha'or. Rabbi Yossi doesn't like the fire test. Why not? Mipnei sha'or ma'amida. Because ultimately, again, I guess the heat, whatever the properties are, but the heat, right, keeps the liquid inside and will not give you a true insight into the nature of the whole. Ella shof sa'al gabei ha'remes. So rather, what should you do? Take the pot, fill it with liquid, and put it on coals. Don't put it on fire, coals. So therefore, again, this way there's heat. This where there's heat, but not too much heat. Im remetz ma'amida, if the heat of the coals keeps the water inside the pot, inside the klicheres, biyadua shemotzi mashke, then I know that what? That the hole is small enough that it only allows for water to go out, but doesn't allow for water to come in. Ve'im lav, but if not, biyadua shekonis mashke. If the water comes out, even when the pot is on top of the coals, halokha l'maisu, if this is a hole that is large enough, ultimately to go ahead and allow water in as well. Okay. Hayatore tipa achatipa. What happens if halacha lemaisa the kli cheres is allowing drop after drop to come out? Look at Rashi. Hayatore tipa achatipa kilomar vizunami bediga im nasan l'socha mayim v'nyotzin tif achatif biadua shekonis mashke. So Rabbi say, if in general when you fill, if there's a hole in the kli cheres and you fill it up and water drips out drop after drop after drop, that's indicative that what? That halacha lemaisa it's motzi mashke. Right, that's pretty indicative then that halacha lemaisa this allows for the, this is a hole that is large enough for liquid to come out. So the Gemara says, for liquid to come out, yes. Ve'im lav, and if not, biyadua shekonis mashke. Then ultimately, again, this would not be a hole big enough to allow liquid out, but would allow liquid in. Good. So the Gemara says, ma'ika. I'm sorry. So we'll say, what exactly is the nafkamina between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama? So we'll say, so now the Gemara is going back for just a moment. Remember again, Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama had different approaches as to how you test a hole in a kli cheres, right? The Tanakama said that what? Fill up the trough, put the utensil in the trough, see if the water goes in. If the water goes in, then ultimately, again, the hole is large enough to allow water in, right? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like that. Rather, he says, again, put the utensil inverted into an empty trough, pour water on. What's the nafkamina? Amr ula, kinus ayadiat chak iga benahu. So we'll say, so the nafkamina would be, what happens if water enters the utensil ayadiat chak through pressure that is applied? The Tanakama will hold. That's still a good indicator that ultimately, again, of the nature of the hole that it allows liquid in. Rabbi Huda says that is not a good indicator. Good. Call Eber Sheish Po Tzipor. So also remember, again, we said any limb, the way the Mishnah said it was any limb. And again, Rashi points out, it's talking specifically over here about an extra finger. So any limb, call Eber Sheish Po Tzipor. If it has a nail, it also has a bone. But there are limbs that have bones that do not have nails. So says the Gemara, Yesh Botzi Poren. So we'll say, if it has a nail, therefore by definition, what else does it have? It has a bone. If that's the case, Yesh Botzi Poren, Mitame Bemaga Ubemasa Uba Ohel. We'll say, such a limb, now obviously we're talking about, when we say this limb conveys tumma, in what state? When it's detached, right? Obviously we're not talking about it when it's on your hand. Right, so the Gemara says, Yesh bo tziporen. So if the extra finger has a nail, therefore by definition also has a bone, therefore it could convey to mamitami bemago, right? Contact, masa, carrying, and ba'ohel. Yesh bo etzen ve'im bo tziporen. But if it has a bone but doesn't have a nail, therefore again, I both say it's not reckoned as a complete aver. Mitami bemago bemasa. It conveys tuma through maga and masa. Ve'eno mitami ba'ohel. But ultimately, again, does not convey tuma. So I will say only. Look at Rashi. Eino mitami ba'ohel. Rashi says. Well, first of all, look at the previous Rashi. Mitami b'maga over obemasa ba'ohel. Tave ever chashuv. So I'll say. So remember again. Once something is an ever, so by definition, it conveys tuma. No matter what the shear is, right? No matter how big or how small that aver is, it conveys tumah. Masha'in kain, if it's not an aver, when Rashi says, Einu matayim ba'ohel, adik gazai. So we'll say, so the statement is a little bit not misleading, but it has to be explained. When we say that if it doesn't have a nail, right, it doesn't convey tumas ohel, that means it doesn't convey tumas ohel if it's pachos mikashir. But if there is a kazayis of it, then inachinami, it will convey tumas ohel as well. So remember, something is an aver, it conveys tumas ohel no matter what the shear of the item is. If something is not an aver, it can convey tumas ohel as long as there is the requisite shear. Adika kezayis basar, Rashi says. Amrav Chista, Chista said, Davar zeh rabbeinu agadol amru. Hamakum yeh be'ozra. So this is actually very beautiful. So Rav Chista said, Rebbe, right, Rabbeinu HaGadol, used to say this, actually changes it over here to Rebbe. Rashi says Rav, but the Agos Tzidum changes it to Rebbe. So the Gemara says, Rebbe used to say this, Rabbeinu HaGadol Amar, I'm sorry, Davar zeh rabbeinu HaGadol Amar, Hamakum yeh be'ozra, Kadosh Baruch Hu should always help him in all of his teachings. Right, he says, Etzpa yisir sheyesh po etzem ve'im bo tzipor. And if you have an extra finger, so we'll say here the lashon of the Brice is just, Rebbe's lashon is just a little bit different. The lashon of our Mishnah was Aver. Rebbe's lashon is a bit more clear and distinct. Rebbe says, not just an Aver, what are we talking about over here? Etzpa yisera. If a person has an extra finger, So Etzpa yisir sheyesh po etzem ve'im bo tziporen. If the extra finger has a bone but doesn't have a nail, mitame b'maga u'b'masa, it has the ability to convey tuma through maga and masa. Ve'ino mitame ba'ohel. But ultimately, again, it does not convey tumas ohel. So we'll say, so remember again, this has the etzem, doesn't have a tziporen. Without the tziporen, doesn't have the din of an aver. Without being an aver, it is mitame maga masa, but not mitame ba'ohel. So when we say not mitame ba'ohel, what does that mean? It's not mitame ba'ohel until when? So you have a kizayis. Amrav arachana arbi yochanan, u'kishe'ino nisperes al gavayad. We'll say, when is that true? That if it doesn't have a nail, it's not mitame tumas ohel. That's only when it's not arranged normally on the hand. So what that means is as follows. If you have a sixth finger, I don't know exactly how this looks, but I guess if you have a sixth finger, and the sixth finger kind of just, you have a picture in there, Gavi? No, I'm sorry. So you have a sixth finger that comes out, and it looks like it's arranged normally on the hand. What the Gemara is saying over here is that has the din of an aver, even if it doesn't have a nail. Right? Why? Because again, it's clearly, it looks like one of the digits. When we talk about a sixth finger only having a din of an aver, if it has a nail, but if it doesn't have a nail, it's not an aver, that's when that digit doesn't look like, or is not arranged like the rest of the fingers on the hand. Okay? Right there. Kol ha-metame medras. So also remember again, the Mishnah said, anything that is metame tumas medras is metame tumas mace. And yet, anything that's metame tumas mace isn't necessarily metame tumas medras. It says the Gemara, let's analyze this. Kol dechazi lemedras, metame tumas mace. Anything that is fit to contract tumas medras also has the ability to contract tumas mace. V'yesh shemetame tumas mace, but yet there are certain things that could become tame tumas mace. Ve'eino metame medras. But Allah said, do not become tame tumas medras. Lasui, my Rabbi said, what could this come to include? Lasui sa'av etarkov. Rabbi says, so the example of this would be, Sa'an Tarkov are utensils. The utensils. Utensils that were used to measure a sa'ah. Utensils used to measure a tarkov. So these utensils, their names became known based on the measurements that they held. So you could have a sa'ah kli, a tarkov kli. So I'll say, so look at Rashi. La'asui sa'av tarkov. She'inon medras hazav l'tame adam ekelim. Aval t'mein tumas meis. So apparently, these utensils cannot become ultimately again tame tumas medras, but they can become tame tumas meis. This sign, you listen to this because we learned in a braisa. V'hayoshev alakli. So we'll say, so the pasuk says, V'hayoshev alakli asher yeshev alav azav yichabis begadar. We'll say, if you sit on a kli that the zav sat on, you contract tumah. That's called tumas medras, right? So if a zav sits on something, he conveys tumas medras to that item, to that kli, and that kli could then subsequently convey tumah to another person who sits on it. So watch this. Says the Gemara, Yachol kafa sa'av yashav alel takav yashav alel yei tameh. I might have thought, they will say if the zav takes one of these utensils, a sa'ah utensil or a takav, we'll say, imagine these as like crates, right? He takes a sa'ah crate or a tarkav crate, and what does he do? Zav turns it upside down, he sits on it. You might have thought ultimately again, therefore these utensils contract tumas medris, tamad lomar, asher yashav alav hazav. Asher yeshav alav hazav. Pause is that which the zav will sit on. I will say, what does this refer to? Ni shemiyuchad li yeshiva. I will say, this refers dafka to utensils that are meant for sitting. utensils that are meant for sin is interesting. Yatsazeh, this comes to exclude the za'ah and tarkav, because they both say, what happens if somebody sits, right? What happens if the za'ah sits on the za'ah tarkav? What's going to happen? Zeh she'omrim lo amod v'naseh melachtenu. They both say, what happens if the za'ah sits on the za'ah and tarkav? What's going to happen? Right? The only thing is going to say, get up. Get up. I have to get to work, right? Remember, we're going to both say, these are measuring utensils. So by definition, again, this is not my living room couch, right? So it's work utensils. So this type of utensil is going to be the kind of thing where the Zav is going to send us, someone's going to say, can you please get up? I have to get back to work. So amazingly enough, the din ultimately of Tumas Medris only applies to something which is normally used for sitting. But just because the Zav ends up sitting on something, if it's an item ultimately, again, that is not really used for yeshiva, not used for sitting purposes, it does not contract Tumas Medrash. Pretty amazing. But we'll say next, along the same themes, we have some really fascinating Mishnayos here. Fascinating. Kala Rai Ladon Dinei Nefashos, Rai Ladon Dinei Mamanas. Let's listen to this. Any judge who is fit to adjudicate capital cases is fit to adjudicate monetary cases. We'll say, that makes sense. In other words, we would assume that the level of, what's the right word? Expertise, the level of, this is not even knowledge. Fitness. The level of fitness required to adjudicate capital cases is going to be much higher than monetary cases. So therefore the Mishnah says, any dayan who is fit to adjudicate a capital case can certainly go ahead and adjudicate a monetary case. However, the yesh sharai ladon dinei mamonis ve'ino ro'an lidei din nefesh. But it doesn't necessarily work in the reverse. In other words, you could have dayanim who are fit to go ahead and adjudicate monetary cases, but are not fit to go ahead and adjudicate capital cases. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, who are we talking about over here? So this is actually quite fascinating. Amar Rav Yehuda, la'asui imamza. So here's what's interesting. You see, when you look at this Mishnah, you would kind of assume, are we talking about knowledge? Like, is that what we're talking about? If you're smart enough to adjudicate a capital case, you're smart enough to adjudicate a monetary case, but just because you're smart enough to adjudicate the monetary case, you're not necessarily smart enough to adjudicate a capital case, that doesn't seem to make sense, because they're both saying, again, it goes to that thing that you need knowledge in order to be able to adjudicate the case. So Rabbi Gemara understands, we're not talking about knowledge as much as we're talking about status. So look at this. Amar Rav Yehuda la'asuye mamzer. We're coming to include Abose a mamzer. So remember again, right, a technical mamzer, not a colloquial mamzer. So Abose, so what does this mean? Look at Rashi. La'asuye mamzer, tikasha ledine mamanis, upasa ledine nefashas. Shabbos says, we're going to see a mamzer is permitted to go ahead and be a dayan, right? Remember again, the Gemara talks about a mamzer tamid chacham, right? And the level of kavod you're obligated to have for a mamzer tamid chacham. But a mamzer dayan is permitted to adjudicate financial cases, monetary cases, is not permitted to adjudicate capital cases. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara Rashi quotes over here, the kash ladinei mamanis, uparsel ladinei nefashas, kedichsev, Kulach Yafa Ra'ayasi. So we'll say, actually quite amazing. The Gemara in Meseches Sanhedrin learns this out from the Pasuk. From the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Kula Yafa Ra'ayasi. And we'll say, the drasha that it makes it is from Umum Ein Bach. There is no mum in you. So how the Gemara ultimately uses that pasuk to tell me that it's talking about a judge of a capital case, we'll leave that for Maseches Sanhedrin. He'll say, but the idea over here is in order to go ahead and adjudicate capital cases, you must satisfy the criteria of umum ein bach. So we'll say, well, who could satisfy that criteria? So the idea is no obvious discernible mum. But a mamzer, of course, does have a mum. We'll say, it's just an interesting din in mamzer. The mamzer himself does have a mum, even though, again, of course, through no fault of himself, of his own. But Lamaisa, there is a severe genealogical blemish. So because of that, the mamzer is permitted to adjudicate capital cases, monetary cases, cannot adjudicate capital cases. Tanina, Chada, Zimna, but we already learned this before. Hakol k'sherin ladun dinei mamonis. So we already learned this halacha once before. This is already mentioned in Maseches Sanhedrin. Everyone is kosher to go ahead and adjudicate financial cases, but not everyone is permitted to adjudicate capital cases. And we asked on that Gemara, Who are you coming to include in this statement? V'amar Rav Yehuda la'suye mamzer. So we already had this halacha before. Why does the Mishnah have to restate this? We already learned before that although a mamzer is fit to adjudicate financial cases, he is not fit to adjudicate capital cases. I'll tell you why, says the Gemara. Chada la'suye ger, v'chada la'suye mamzer. The truth is, Rabosai, it's actually the two different Mishnahs teach us two different halachas. One is to exclude the convert, and one is to exclude the mamzer. So halacha lemaisa, a ger and a mamzer can both be dayanim ultimately for what? For financial cases. But do not have the right to serve as dayanim ultimately for what purpose? For capital cases. Both are covered under the same exclusion of hine yafach raya si umum ein bach. Both the ger as well as the mamzer have a mum. There is a genealogical blemish. So because of that halacha lemaisa, they cannot serve as dayanim for capital cases. So the Gemara says, "Utsrichi." They're both saying, interestingly enough, I could have easily learned out one from the other. Why do I need to learn out both separately? I'll tell you why. "Utsrichi." Tiashmuin and ger, because if it would have just said ger, I would have said mishum d'ray lava lakal. They're both saying the reason that ger is permitted to go ahead and adjudicate the mamonis cases is because the ger is a full-fledged Jew, right? There's no limitations on the ger. Ava mamzer de'ein ra'i lavo bakal, imolo, but a mamzer, who is not permitted to come into the assembly, right? Remember again, a mamzer has a very, very, very restricted marriage pool. I would have thought that maybe he's not even permitted to adjudicate financial cases, imolo. Yashmina mamzer, if we would have just said mamzer, mishum deka'asi mitipa k'shera. So we'll say, this is very interesting. The mamzer comes from Tipa Kshera. Right? So it comes from Tipa Kshera. The mamzer comes from who? Jewish parents. Albeit it was an illicit union, but he comes from Jewish parents. Aval ger da ka'asi mitipa psula imalo. But a ger who comes from Tipa Psula, right? From Gentile parents, I might have thought that he can't even adjudicate financial cases. Therefore, tzvicha. Therefore, we'll say, bottom line, halacha l'maisa, the Mishnah teaches me, anyone who is fit to adjudicate capital cases can adjudicate financial cases, but not everyone who could adjudicate financial cases is permitted to adjudicate capital cases. Who is this coming to include? Specifically says the Gemara, the Ger, and the Mamzer. Both are permitted to adjudicate financial cases, not permitted to adjudicate capital cases. So we'll say, we'll begin at least the next Mishnah, just so we have a minute or two. Kala kasher ladun, kasher lahoid. We'll say next case, interestingly enough, whoever is kasher to go ahead and judge is kasher in order to be a witness. V'yesh shekasher lahaid ve'eino kasher ladun. But there are some people ultimately, again, who are permitted to give testimony, but are not permitted to go ahead and judge. Okay, so it makes sense, right? Anyone who's fit to be a judge is fit to be a witness, but not everyone who's fit to be a witness is fit to be a judge. Says the Gemara la'suye ma'irbos. This is actually fascinating. Who is this coming to include? Amar Rabbi Yochanan la'suye suma ba'achas me'inav. It's coming to exclude someone who is blind in one of their eyes. Look at Rashi. Someone who's blind in one eye is permitted to give testimony. You could be a witness. But interestingly enough, ve'ino kasher ladun. I will say, fascinatingly, is not permitted to be a judge. Why not? This is amazing. So obviously, if you're blind in both eyes, you can't give testimony. Right? So therefore, halacha the Gemara says, for to be a judge, you need both eyes. But ultimately, again, to go ahead and be a witness, you only need one eye. So the Gemara says, Umani, who's a pain? So just the one line, the top of the known. Umani, who's a pain? Does this reflect? Rabbi Meirhi. This was Rabbi Meir. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem with the opinion of Rabbi Meir, Emirat Hashem, tomorrow. Shackles.